Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we just heard from Dr. Ashraf Gamaldeen, the Chief Executive Officer of HACMA, the Institute for Corporate Governance. And he was saying how companies with good corporate governance beat the market, and in fact, they've created an index to prove it, and which they're seeing at least a 20% increase in a bull market. And the ability to withstand the bear market much better than companies without that corporate governance. But overall, he said, if you want investors, if you want to attract that FDI, or you even want to sell the company down the road, corporate governance is the way to go. If you missed his piece, you can catch it on our website on DubaiEye1038.com/EyeOnCareers and click on the podcast. It'll be there. But the best part about the show is it's interactive. And so for all those people out there who ever wanted to join investment banking or the sexy world of private equity, we have a man who has really championed both spaces. His name's David Donaldson. He is the finance director for Emirates Investment Authority. And prior to joining the EIA, he was the chief financial officer for Abraj, the iconic private equity group here in the region and one of the biggest success stories in Dubai, as we saw the vertical ascent of personalities such as Arif Naqvi and Imtiaz Hadari and a few other individuals who cut their teeth on the Inchcape deal way back in the day. But David started his career at Arthur Andersen, where he qualified as an ICAEW chartered accountant. He's also a graduate of Oxford, more than anything, he's a rugby union fan and who says his performance off the pitch may eclipse his performance on the pitch. But that's another story. David, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
It's a pleasure to have you here. So you really have, kind of touched on two of the sexiest parts of business, you know, the private equity and the investment banking pieces. And for some reason, people, when they, when you see fresh MBA graduates, you know, those are the two, I want to go into private equity, I want to go into investment banking. So you did both, but it started with the ICAEW qualification, the chartered accountancy.
Yep. Absolutely. I think, and I would recommend this to anybody out there, I think when you're in your early 20s and you've left undergrad school or grad school, getting a professional qualification is very important. And it's almost as important in the long term as it is in the short term, and I'll come back to that in a second, Shane. There's multiple qualifications you could take. There's the accounting route, there's the legal route, there's the CFA route. The reason it's important is not only does it give you a very broad business training at a very young age, but also it's, in many ways it's like an insurance policy. How many guys who qualify with these big firms go through career problems or career traumas, and suddenly back in their 40s and 50s go back into the world that they learned in their 20s. So I would recommend everybody to do this. Now, it's heavy lifting. It's a short-term sacrifice for a long-term gain, but it is an insurance policy. So the thing I learned from there is, looking back in time, was it was the best move I made, even though it was a hard slog working and studying. The other key lesson I took out from that early point of my career is identifying role models in businesses. Guys are two, three years older than you, looking at the way they operate, the way they network, the way they behave. And fortunately, with Arthur Andersen, we had about 200 of us in London going through the same program over a three-year period. So there were probably about 600 employees. So there was a lot of role models, and some of them were in the bar as well.
So you mentioned that getting a role model or getting a mentor almost is what if I would read between the lines. Is that do you really think people need to have that? Because I find today we're in the Middle East. Very few people, if you say, who's the best CFO or who's the best, I'm an executive search. Who's the best executive search professional? Very few professionals actually say, oh, yeah, these are the kind of guys I'm aspiring to be. Is that kind of one of the things that kind of pull you forward in your performance?
Yeah, I think it works better if you're working in a big corporate or a big organization like a professional services firm, where there are a lot of guys who've gone through what you're going through slightly earlier than you. If you're in a smaller, perhaps a family office structure or a more boutique structure, there aren't that many people who can act as role models. But certainly in professional services, look at some guy who, particularly the guys who've been through the firm and perhaps gone out into industry or into private equity and made it on their own. So, and try and work out by yourself how did they do it? Why did they do it? And you know, stay in touch with them socially as well as professionally. I think in the Middle East, I think you're right. I think there is some mentoring. Funny enough, even in my organization at the moment, which is probably 50% Emirati, I think I do act in a mentorship capacity to two local guys. And, I actually enjoy that. Coaching is another thing. I mean, coaching is a very Western structured thing, often a thing that's used in adversity or when people are going through unemployment or struggles rather than necessarily on the positive side. So there isn't that much coaching here. But again, getting back to your question, it depends on the size of the organization. You know, can a Citibank or an HSBC produce mentors? Probably. Can the professional services firms? Yes. In a smaller organization, an entrepreneurial, maybe 2-3-man-led organization, it's kind of harder, but, you know, because of scale.
But don't you go outside the organization and you can ask someone, and that could almost be better, right? Because
absolutely.
Your manager may have, or someone who has an agenda, you would be a pawn in, perchance, sometimes, not always.
Yeah, no, I mean, networking is very important, and it's something you realize as you get older, and especially if you do go through some challenges. And in this day and age, when you've got both physical networking and you've also got online networking through things like LinkedIn, it's a lot easier to do. And again, I would encourage people to do that. So even in an online basis where you're not interacting in a human capacity, there are groups and forums within the online community that you can leverage as well to speak to people with your fingers on a typewriter, if not face to face. Absolutely. And I think in many cases you'll find that people actually are interested in helping, and I like being approached by somebody outside my company for advice or just some help and guidance, and generally people do, so don't be shy in asking.
How did you crack into Solomon Brothers, though? Was that a tough nut to break?
It wasn't too bad. I mean, I qualified as in the financial services division of Arthur Andersen, and that was at the time when the big U.S. banks came into London in the late 80s. It was a thing called Big Bang. It was a deregulation of the London market, not only the market in terms of the broking and what used to be called broking and jobbing sections of the London Stock Exchange, but also they opened up the London market to overseas broker-dealers, to use a U.S. vernacular. Arthur Andersen was the creme de la creme. I don't wish, I'm not shy about that. And so really they came to us rather than the other way around. So it was point in time, opportunity. There was no finance function there. There was no sales and trading function. So basically there were about a dozen guys from the London market, from PricewaterhouseCoopers and Lybrand, and Arthur Andersen, who went in to set the whole function up in London.
So a bit of serendipity at play.
Well, and time and place, Shane, to be honest with you. Serendipity, yes. The other thing was, they didn't have enough people in the US. They were still quite new in the US, and nobody had traveled outside New York before in terms of the key control function. So they really had to build from scratch. So they took a whole bunch of us. They took a lot of traders from the US, put them in London, and then worked out that maybe it might be a good idea if we had a control environment around them and everything else that's required to make sure the whole thing doesn't blow up.
This was one of the big paradigm shifts in America in corporate history, when prior to that they were looking at centralizing and streamlining, but you just can't run your operations in the US the same way you do in UK. And so in fact, a lot of companies almost went bankrupt in this period. This is the early 80s, is it?
Mid to late 80s. I mean, one of the funniest things was having to teach people in New York that there was a currency other than the dollar. And this is pre the euro. So
They're still doing that, aren't they?
I remember having a conversation with a guy in New York that we were doing interest rate swaps, and I said, we're doing an Australian shilling dollar swap. And he sat there and he said, well, you talk that Austria's part of Germany, isn't it, buddy? And I went, well, no, you don't tell Austria that. So, sorry to talk briefly as an accountant for a moment, but of course having multi-currency accounting systems to them that was an example of a challenge that nobody ever thought of in the US, where everything was done in one currency. Suddenly we're trading 15-16 currencies, and that presents completely different challenges that they didn't even think of when they embarked on the trading experience or adventure that we went on.
Well, this is David Donaldson, Finance Director for Emirates Investment Authority. He's a gentleman who's worked for iconic brands such as Abraj in the private equity space, as well as Solomon Brothers in the investment banking space. He's an ICAW chartered accountant, and he is sharing his views, tips and tricks to getting to the top of your profession and driving peak performance in your organization. So we'll be right back with some of his winning career strategies in just a minute.
Dubai Eye 103.8, keeping you up to date with what matters in the UAE. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. For those of you just joining us, we opened the show with Dr. Ashraf Gamaldeen, the Chief Executive Officer of Hakama, who was talking about the importance of corporate governance and how companies with great corporate governance, A, outperform the market, B, it's easier for them to attract investors and foreign direct investment, it's easier for them to sell. So there's a lot of upside there, and it seems to be a growing trend in the region. And now we are with David Donaldson, a gentleman who was previously the chief financial officer at Abraj. Currently, he's the finance director at the Emirates Investment Authority. And he started his career first with Arthur Andersen, where he qualified as a ICAEW chartered accountant. And after that, he joined the sexy world of investment banking at Solomon Brothers. Welcome back to Eye on Careers, David.
Thank you, Shane.
So when you were looking at your career, I mean, you've really skyrocketed up. A lot of people, as they say, they hit that glass ceiling and they don't ever jump out of being controller. And sometimes, you know, 10 years pass and they just can't make the move. What's your advice to people who you feel they may be a bit stuck or getting stuck in a rut, if you will?
Yeah, I think that's fine. Obviously, on paper, it looks like that. But I think twice in my career, I had to make those type of decisions. And I'm going to call it move out to move up. I hit a glass ceiling at one U.S. investment bank, which I will remain nameless, where politically what was happening was everybody in New York was getting promoted and the guys in the satellite offices were not, and that happened a couple of years.
Were they discriminating against you because you're a Scotsman?
They and rightly so. And then I made the conscious decision. It took me a time. Exactly what you were saying. You drift. You get into it. You plateau at maybe a controllership level or a functional controllership level. And then you make the decision. Then you realize that. You recognize that. And actually, I took some advice from headhunters and esteemed headhunters like yourself. And we came to the conclusion that, look.
That's not how they usually talk about
us. No. Well, you paid me to say that. But so I then moved to another firm to move up to a position. Then slightly later in life,
so you quit.
Quit and went.
The headhunter got you to quit. You gotta watch out for that.
He facilitated. He facilitated.
they've got to take a fee. Correct
guys, the vultures. Me. Vultures. The other decision. I think this is quite an important one. Yeah. I think it's important more to the Middle East than anywhere else. Is about size of organization. Often we go through life thinking we want to work for the best or the biggest, the biggest law firm, the biggest pharma company, the biggest tech company, the biggest.
That's
bank.
The American hoorah.
And that's what
the
I
biggest.
Did. I did. I went through big accounting, big bank, big IB, and then a couple of big IBs and a big German IB who should remain nameless, but it's kind of obvious who. And then I sat back and I thought to myself again, maybe 10 years later, that okay, you're definitely going to plateau out here in big pharma, okay. And I sat back and I started talking to a few guys, and I ended up working for an organization that had 30 people in London, 30, including the T-boys. So sometimes I think as you grow older, it's better to be a big fish in a small pond than a small fish in a big pond. And people use that as an example. But some people, I think if you guys, anybody that's listening that's in that situation, big is not always best. If you're going to really, really make it in life, in whatever sector you are, maybe, and we have some, we're going into the tech world in a second, you've really got to, in my view, you've got to go and take a risk, and you've got to move out of a comfort zone, and you're going to do that in a small organization, in a young organization, and you're only ever going to make it if you've got equity or skin in the game. And that ain't going to happen in big companies. So the two lessons, from my career looking back, are don't be afraid to move out to move up. Don't be afraid to go into a small organization from a big organization. You know, build the foundations of your career with big law firm, big accounting firm, big tech firm. But if you really want to make it, I think you're going to make it in a smaller organization where you grow with the organization. Not everybody's going to be a partner in Goldman Sachs. Every entry level person there thinks they are. How many do they make up a year? 10 globally. If that.
Really, yeah. Only 10.
Or something like that.
And they lay off like 1,000. So.
Well, maybe 15. Something of that order of magnitude. The math is like something like that.
You're like a jiu-jitsu master, though, because at Goldman, they're like, it's up or out. And you're like, well, out or but I'm out and up.
Yeah.
So it's you got a two-way go on that one. But it's an interesting trend you're talking about, because a lot of executives are actually thinking like you. And one of the trends when we look at the future of work is that you're going to have these huge mega conglomerates that you can continue to see consolidation, whether it's in banking or logistics or IT, where, you know, if you want to compete, you just have to have this huge, insane scale. Mm-hmm. Then you also see the emergence of the super entrepreneurs, or these small companies of 30, 40 people that are servicing, that are working globally, that are virtually present everywhere, and are actually nipping away business here and there from the behemoths. And so what your strategy is saying, if you want to maximize your wealth creation opportunity, you best cash out of the big corporate game and get equity into one of these super agile, up-and-coming companies.
Absolutely. I mean, that is the only way. I mean, I'm speaking with a private equity thought process at the moment, but it doesn't have to be private equity. But that is the only way to really make a successful career, if money is your objective. Now, this again, we're talking about career paths. We're talking about career options. This all depends on what your attitude, your personal risk attitude is. You know, what is your risk appetite? Maybe you're comfortable being mid-ranking manager at Citibank in Idaho. That's fine. Or you know, I don't know where Idaho
in
came
Idaho.
From.
But in or, Idaho, no, I want that job. I want to go to Idaho.
Or you're happy being a mid-ranking manager in Seoul, Korea, and that's fine. You'll stay in there. If you really have aspirations to reach the top and you have a strong entrepreneurial skill set, statistically, you're not going to make it in these huge conglomerates, because there's going to be layers and layers and layers of management above you, and often a heavy centralization of management and a political, particularly in the U.S., a political elite that doesn't often allow non-Americans
just
to progress.
Nailing the Americans tonight from all sides. It's like, Dick, don't...
we're a Canadian company.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because you know you're actually saying all this almost while you sit beside a gentleman who's also exercising a very similar career path, and his name is Vimal Sethi, the managing director of Synchron, and he has over 20 years of tech experience, the bedrock of which was laid at Microsoft, where the lion's share of his career has taken place and kind of blossomed. From there, he was most recently the vice president and GM of Infusion Development Middle East, and he also has left the mega conglomerate and gone into something a bit more entrepreneurial, a trend that we are seeing more and more every day. But let's welcome our next guest, Vimal Sethi. Welcome to Ion Careers.
Thank you, Shane. Great to be here.
It's a pleasure to have you here, and I just thought it was an opportune time because David was talking about career strategies, and I think when he was saying, you've almost echoed verbatim in your career.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more with David. You know, a few years ago, I took the leap and left Microsoft. I'd been there for about 10 years, and I was approached by Infusion to set up their office in the Middle East. And,
did you get equity in that?
I didn't, and we can talk about that later. but that leap was something that I had to do for myself and for my continuous growth in my career. And it so happened, you know, I left Microsoft the next day. I started working out of Starbucks in JBR because they had free Wi-Fi and great coffee. And when I told my wife,
it's a generous statement.
first, she thought I was crazy, but then she knew what I was trying to achieve, which was continue to grow and learn. And I was just at a point in my career where I had to move out.
Were you scared?
I was terrified.
You go from a big Microsoft where you're like,
absolutely.
You know, you're like an aircraft carrier, and then you're like in the corner of Starbucks.
Yeah, exactly. But you know, it was a point in time where I had to prove to myself you know, that I could do other things, and I had the ability to build businesses. And so from Starbucks, you know, we grew a very sizable company. We did business with some of the biggest brands in the region.
So you started from scratch. You were the first employee of Infusion?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But you should have got equity then.
At least one share.
Well, that's history. You know?
Yeah, that's history.
That's history.
You live and you learn, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And now, you know, I've just joined Synchron, which is a phenomenal success story. It's a company that's built over the last decade. You met Faisal, right?
Yeah, Faisal did the same thing. He was Citibank, right?
He went from Merrill.
Yeah. Merrill. And then he basically couldn't get the service he needed for I think their web interfaces that they were trying to create. And he went and did it himself. And, a corporate man turned entrepreneur. And I didn't look back. How many staff you have now?
You know, we're close to 5,000 people now.
Oh,
Shane,
so my
it's a
God.
Phenomenal story.
Oh, my God. See, David, you are a trendsetter. You're right on point, you know, picking out. So we have three in a row here, and it's the way to go. David, what else did you have there? I thought you had a few other key career strategies. One was the out and up move. The other one is getting an equity play on a smaller company. But I think in order to do that, you have to do your time in the big corporates to get that bedrock.
So build the bedrock, as I said, in legal or in tech or in finance, perhaps a CFA if you're ultimately thinking about private equity, because it all boils down to EBITDA multiples and Excel spreadsheets. I guess a couple of things. Don't burn your bridges. That's a very important lesson. Some of the people I'm doing business with and some guys I did business with when I was 20, we joined when we were 20. We had nothing. We were the highest paid accountants in London. We earned £4,000 a year, 24,000 dirhams a year. You know, we had nothing. And these are buddies I've made. Now I'm doing business with them when I'm in our 50s. So don't burn your bridges. That's a very important lesson. It's very easy to... If you're going to leave a company, do not leave a company under a cloud.
Don't leave a company under a cloud. This is Eye on Careers, and we're talking with David Donaldson, Finance Director for Emirates Investment Authority. And we're also joined by Vimal Sethi, the Managing Director of Synchron, a tech guru who has made the jump out of Microsoft and built up a company, Infusion, basically from scratch, and is now running with Synchron, which has 5,000 employees, but also started from basically a kitchen in New York. We're going to be getting some more insights from these guys in just a minute, so stay with us.
Dubai Eye 103.8, award-winning news, business, sport, and lifestyle coverage. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. For those of you just joining us, we open the show with Dr. Ashraf, the Chief Executive Officer of Hakama, and he talked about some of the big trends that we're seeing in corporate governance and how he's created an index which is demonstrating companies with good corporate governance have up to a 20% lift or alpha on the market, that they're actually outperforming the market. So that's an interesting trend. If you wanted to see or hear any of that, you can go to our website at 1038.com. It's DubaiEye1038.com. And you can also pick up the podcast at DubaiEye1038.com/EyeOnCareers. And we are now speaking with David Donaldson, the Finance Director for Emirates Investment Authority, and Vimal Sethi, the Managing Director for Synchron. And they're saying while some big corporations have an up or out attitude, they're saying the career strategy of the future is an out and up one that reverses the up or out of the corporations, which doesn't really make any sense the way I'm describing it. But so let's bring them on and it'll make more sense there with us. David, welcome back to Eye on Careers. Sorry, I had the wrong mic on there. Welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Jay.
There you go. Yeah, your mic's on. Yeah, Vimal, thank you so much and welcome back. So both of you guys had worked in massive corporations, Microsoft for Vimal, Solomon Brothers, and many others, which we prefer not to mention, I guess, tonight, and then moved out into kind of more entrepreneurial environments. But now you guys are, you know, really hiring senior people, identifying senior people. What do you look for when you're hiring top performers?
Yeah, if I can go first, certainly for me, it's really a few core things. One is just passion. You know, we look for people that really have passion about what they do. They have a tremendous amount of energy, a positive energy they can bring to the organization. And they really strive to learn. You know, we're always looking for people that want to grow and learn. And those are typically the people that not only become high performers, but also have tremendous high potential. And it's important to really differentiate between the two.
I mean, that's an interesting point, the difference between the high performer and high potential. Can you maybe just elaborate that a
little
bit?
Sure. In my experience, I spent a lot of time in sales. I've worked with a lot of high-performing individuals when it comes to delivering on their results. But those individuals are not necessarily always the ones with the highest potential. And the way I look at that is, you know, people with high potential really, their behavior, their approach is about excellence. It's about sharing what they know and being mentors for others. It's about setting an example. It's about the long term versus the how am I going to hit my quarter revenue goals, etc. So not saying that an organization doesn't need both, but sometimes it's very important to pair those. And some of the common mistakes that organizations do is to take a high performer and make them into a manager of other people, when in most cases they really just want to be individual performers and deliver on their own tasks. So again, it's important to understand the differentiation, but it's also important to identify both and help both of those types of individuals to grow and learn.
And David?
Yes, I agree with a lot of what Vimal's just said. For me, it starts with a baseline of technical competency. Is the individual technically competent to do the job, and is that evidenced by his prior experience? But the days where technical competency is enough are long gone. We're talking about here about ambition. We're talking about desire and passion. We're talking about out-of-the-box thinking. It's quite amazing the number of times that people come in to be interviewed where they look fantastic on paper, and 5 minutes into this, you think, is this guy alive? You know, do I need to put a mirror up to his mouth to see he's still breathing? It really is. Some of the conversations I've had, you know, there's no hunger, there's no drive, there's no asking the questions, there's no interest in me as the employer. It's almost going through the motions. And I realize I'm focusing a bit on the negative here, but, you know, passion, desire, interest in the company, research in the company, some evidence of out of the box thinking, some practical evidence of that. And the other thing that's important to me, with a sports background originally, is teamwork. Can I see this guy as part of a team, especially where we started? You know, even in my current organization, we're 40 people, including the T-boys. You know, that's not a lot of people. Yet, so we're strong as the weakest link in terms of the management layer. So teamwork is very important. The other thing is some simple practical advice here on, and this is something that I find is a bit of an issue, when I'm interviewing, and Vimal, well, we've interviewed many people, is the lack of preparation is quite significant. And funnily enough, it gets worse the more senior you get. Usually the more junior guys, the tech-savvy guys, they've done the research, they've done as much as they can on the internet, they've talked to their buddies and their peers. Above that, sometimes people just seem to be there because they need a job, and that isn't enough in this day and age. So really, there's technical competency plus, and the other thing is humility. We don't talk enough about that. But if somebody is humble, somebody is selling themselves, but in a professional way, you know, not the big I am sell. I think that's important. So there's a number of different things, but you just. Has this guy got some USPs, to getting back to your marketing speak? What is unique about this guy over and above the technical thing? And do I think he really wants to work for me? And what basis am I making that decision? If I can't answer that question, yes, which is more of a soft question, then I won't hire him.
I always think it's funny, though, that organizations say, oh, we want a teamwork, we want to have a team. And they'll say, okay, now let's compensate people based on individual performance. And, you know, and at the end of the day, let's promote, you know, the top performer. And that is exactly what you're saying, is that, you know, that we're basically promoting people into leadership roles when they're not leaders. Is this not a big paradox and conundrum that's unraveling now, that in fact, when we're chanting in chorus, we want certain capabilities, but in fact, we're creating organizational structures and incentive programs that are creating the antithesis to what we're actually striving for? I mean, is the big, you know, the Achilles heel of the corporation itself?
Yeah, I think it is a conundrum, and I think, you know, every organization looks at results and performance. That's, you know, it's really, really key. But I also think that, you know, investing in high potential and doing things like succession planning are good traits of a mature organization. So whether you're whether you're a startup or whether you're a sizable organization, really to understand who are the people in the organization that's going to help you take your organization to the next level. You know, how will you grow? How will you actually involve your people in your strategy as you evolve as a company, as you grow? So if I look at some of my own experiences, you know, when we started in my previous company, there was only a few of us who started, and we grew very, very quickly. And we had to build a foundation for the growth that was going to come in the next few years. And at that point, it was very important to identify who will be those individuals that have the fundamentals, not just this quarter and next quarter, but who can help set the foundation for long-term growth. And sometimes those individuals are not the ones that are performing right now.
Yeah, we've gone about this in a slightly different way, and for exactly the reason you mentioned, the apparent dichotomy between individual performance and teamwork. And the way we've addressed this is, our performance management system is actually the aggregate of three factors. People are rated on teamwork. There's an overall corporate performance, and there's an individual performance, and there's a matrix-based system that determines an overall compensation. So if the guy is lousy as a team player, or his team is lousy within the organization, he will be hit. You know, he may be a one rating as an individual, but if his teamwork skills are weak, he moves down the ladder, and then ultimately at the corporate level as well. So that's one way. Not many people do that, and to be honest with you, didn't come from us. It came from one of the leading HR consultancy firms who advise us on this as a potential way of recompensating people. But having a compensation framework where it's not just a year 1 to 5 on an individual rating scale, but, you know, and then also looking at the grade level, and you compensate the higher people more in corporate performance, because, you know, the lower clerical people can't necessarily influence that. But, you know, it's an amalgam of corporate, individual, and departmental performance, and that kind of evens out the, you know, if the guy is just a wonderful deliverer, but has an appalling teamwork and is political and is ruining relationships, he will get hit. He will not get compensated.
Yeah, just to add to that, I think there's a tremendous focus on competencies and developing people's competencies, and, you know, myself, I've been involved in a lot of tools that we use in organizations. I remember back in 2004, I was exposed to a tool called Strengths Finder, which was, again, looking and developing people's strengths rather than focusing on their weaknesses. And again, it's a fundamental shift in how you evaluate and develop people. So that was a big turning point for me, and really looking at people's strengths going forward. And that's something that I've applied in all my management positions. But I agree with my colleague here in terms of really having that balanced scorecard is very important.
So very interesting. Now, if you're out there and you're looking at developing yourself, should you be focusing on your weaknesses? Should you be focusing on your strengths? How should you be developing your team? We're going to be answering all those questions in just a minute, so stay with us.
Dubai i103.8, content that keeps you listening. Stay one step ahead.
Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And we are having one cracker of a show here. We've got David Donaldson, the finance director of Emirates Investment Authority, a man who started his career by getting his ICAEW qualification with Arthur Andersen and went on to crack the tough nut of investment banking at Salomon Brothers and catapulted himself into one of the top private equity firms here in the region, if not the top, Abraj Capital. One of the local favorites in the very least. And now he is with the EIA, which is one of the leading sovereign funds in the region. David, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
And then we also are joined by an IT guru, a man who laid the bedrock of his career in the iconic company Microsoft, which we all know, and then went on to be one of the founding members of Fusion, which he was the vice president and GM of Infusion Development Middle East. And then he joined Faisal in his global sprawling empire of Synchron, a company which Faisal started because he just couldn't get the service he wanted. And I think that's some of the best entrepreneurs are people who don't want to be entrepreneurs but are forced into it, either on a value call or on a quality of service call. So we have a man here who has, you know, both these guys have worked in huge companies and now are working in more entrepreneurial environments. But I guess by some stretches, Synchron is a huge company. It has 5,000 employees. But Vimal, welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
It's a pleasure to have these guys here. And, you know, if you have a question, and we have some questions coming in from the audience here, if you have a question, you can SMS us at 4001. And we have a question coming in here is, what exactly is leadership? I think that's a good question. And just before we tackle that, we are having a peak performance event. We're having an event called the Executive Mindset. And this is to give you an edge and get you in that seat of what the top performer's mindset is or where you need to be to get into that top 1 or 5%. And leading that panel, we have some of the top executives in the Middle East there. We have Anas Sadik, who's the office manager partner of Deloitte, and he's also an ICAEW chartered accountant. And we have the chief executive of Al Barij International, who is Mukhtar Hassan. He's also an ICAEW chartered accountant by chance. We have Kashif Rana, who's the CFO of Aqua Power, one of the largest utility companies, and in fact, they run their business almost like a private equity house. And then we have the infamous Ziad Makazumi, Chief Executive Officer of Faki IVF and former CFO of ArabTech, these guys are going to be sharing their insights of driving peak performance in your own career and driving peak performance in your organization. And any career question you have, you really have access to guys who have done it. This is not academics. These are not HR consultants. These are guys who've literally built $100 million plus companies up from scratch. Okay, that is going to happen on November 30th at the Canadian University of Dubai from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. It's a free event. Everyone's invited. Even if you are, as David has said, is a T-boy or you're a CEO, it doesn't matter. It's a free event. It's an open house, and it's part of the CSR activity that both I and the Canadian University of Dubai are doing to bring a leadership dialogue into the community. So please come out on November 30th, which is a Sunday evening, November 30th from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. at the Canadian University of Dubai, and join us as we explore the executive mindset, driving peak performance in your career and in your organization. But now let's take this question is, what is leadership? And see our guests here are looking at their shoelaces here. Who wants to step up and take the first swing at this question? As David Donaldson is coming up to the microphone here, and so, David, what is leadership?
I mean, that's a clear, very good question, and there's probably 95 Harvard professors that have written 95 books on this subject. Again, I think it varies slightly depending on the context. I'm not sure the context of the question. I think it may be different in the political sphere, from the sporting sphere, or from the business sphere.
The academics, like you mentioned, these professors have never led anything. And they're the ones writing the leadership book.
Which is a very good point.
Or you have the leadership consultants who've never led anything.
They've
never led.
Yeah, so that's why I don't have an MBA, thank God.
Thank God for that.
I think leaders have certain characteristics, whether it is the leader of the soccer team, or the leader of the political party, or the leader of a race in a Mandela type context, or the leader of a business. I think the characteristics they have are they're inspiring, they're strong communicators, they're visionary, they're strategic, you know. But most of them as well are courageous, and you think, hang on, that guy is taking a personal risk. That guy is representing not only himself, but you feel as if he's leading an organization. It's a team of soccer players. It's a company. It's a political party. It's a race trying to get out of apartheid. You know, so in many ways they are representatives of a broader cross section of people, but they inspire people. I think the other thing is that they reward success. They recognize success. It's not all just about them. So they've got quite strong soft skills as well as the hard skills. Again, it does vary, vary on context. But I would say it's a strong decisive personality, visionary, and somebody that places an emphasis on delivery and achievement.
Very good. And Vimal?
You know, I just to add to what David just listed so diligently, it's really, for me, I wrote down things like purpose. You know, leaders really provide a purpose and a direction. They also provide clarity. You know, why are we here? What are we meant to do as an organization, or where are we trying to reach towards? So I think in addition to being inspirational, they're also enablers. You know, they provide a platform where people can grow and learn and be successful, whether that's inside a company or in a football team or as a nation. So there's a number of key things, and I think we've together summarized it quite well, actually.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't mind adding to this myself, because it's also kind of what I do for a profession. But when I look at what both you guys have said, and you look at the subtext or what the actual building blocks of some of these things are, so when you say courage, what actually is courage? And for a long time in my life, I thought you're either courageous or you weren't. But when you actually start to do the research on the courage, you look at take someone like Gandhi. He's a man who in his book self-professed scared of the dark. He was a coward for most of his life. So why all of a sudden does he become courageous? And you realize that your courage is when your value gets, you value something so much, you actually value it more than your own life. So he valued the Indian independence and Indian way of life more than his own life, and eventually ended up giving his life for it and died with a smile, happy that he had done so. Same with Nelson Mandela, that his value of equality was greater than his value of his own life. And so when he was locked in prison, he said he was free even though he's locked up, because he would rather have gone to prison for his beliefs than have sacrificed them and then lived as without his character. And so when you look at it, it really comes down to your values. What do you stand for? And then when you look at the other things you said, direction, decisive, clarity, these all also come from your value system. If I'm a vegan and I don't eat meat, and you say, hey, Shane, do you want a hamburger? Do you want to have a steak? It's very clear. I immediately know based on my values that I will not have a steak. Or I'm not a vegan, because I would have a steak. But what I'm saying is that I'm just giving an example of how your strength of your values make your sense of direction and sense of purpose so clear. And that's where the thing is, integrity is your ability to craft those values and develop that strength of character. And at the end of the day, when you look at why is the guy who started Doctors Without Borders, the leader of the healthcare movement into pioneering markets, because he values it to the point where he literally puts his life on the line. Now, personally, I really do want to have people, you know, help people have good healthcare, but I'm not really going to go into that, you know, Ebola area or something like that. But I would give $100 or $200 to the person, so I don't value it as much. But I aspire, and I look to, up to the guy who does, you know, go and do that. So he inspires us to be better people in these areas where we would like to have those values, but we don't. And so early on, when you say you need to have integrity, I think early career executives miss the opportunity because you don't sacrifice. And if you don't sacrifice early on, you don't build that strength of character. When Gandhi was thrown from the train in South Africa, he refused to give up his seat. That cemented, when you come off subconsciously, you say, I was willing to die for this. I must be really committed to this value. So, you know, I agree with everything you're saying, but underpinning almost every single one of your kind of main points was underpinned by values. And I think, and our thing is saying now in the corporates, and I think that's exactly why you guys left the large corporates, because their leadership programs are not touching on the actual essence of it, and they've lost their integrity. You know, they've lost the actual core value of what we stand for, and these capital markets, quarterly gains are just not cutting it anymore. Sorry if that was a long monologue, but that's what I think. I don't know if you guys think of this is about, you know, I think that's where people miss the point.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And, you know, you probably recall from your conversation with our CEO and founder, for Synchron and for Faisal, was never about making money. It was about being the best of in the trade. It's about being best at what you do. And that really resides across our organization. And when we hire people, that's what we look for. It's less about the monetization of it. It's important for us, it's part of our growth, but that's not why people join Synchron.
And I think if you even go back and listen to our podcast on dubaii1038.com/ioncareers, notice I said, you know, those are the best entrepreneurs. They almost didn't want to be entrepreneurs, but it's a value call that you're being pushed into, say, he just couldn't take it anymore. He's like, I can't take this level of service. I got to do it myself.
And to an extent, it's a point in time opportunity as well. It's time. Some of it's time and place.
Right.
It's not all driven by negativity. It's also driven by, you know, seeing an opportunity in the market. I think you were talking about Citibank was the primary customer. Yeah. And they came from that environment. So a little bit of its time and place, as well as just putting your hands up and saying, well, hang on, I can do this better myself.
Yeah, but I think, you know, when you go back on it, you say the individuals who are just looking at opportunities, they won't drive it to the same point as, say, someone like Faisal did.
Without the passion, yeah.
Yeah, because they don't value it, right? Yeah. So for 8 years, Faisal made no money, right? He was like,
yeah.
He was like suffering.
Mac and cheese, yeah.
He was suffering with mac and cheese. But a lot of people are saying emotional intelligence when you guys are moving forward with your business, how do you inculcate these concepts into your team? How do you create this kind of consensus where, you know, what we're really talking about is the subconscious, collective subconscious of your organization? What toolkit does a leader have to really create impact in this area? And is it an area that you need to look at? Or, you know, should we stick more with the tangibles where, you know, like you said, thank God I don't have an MBA. Well, this is your business plan. These are your metrics. This is your KPIs. This is what we need to do. Get these actionable objectives that we need to filter down. Is that where we need to be? Or do we need to be looking at more the esoteric subconscious, which will become the concrete, definitive, competitive advantage in the 21st century?
Look, I can talk about my own experiences. You know, Shane, I've had the opportunity to live and work in Scandinavia, in the UK, in the US, and I've been in the Middle East for now 9 years. And throughout my time, I've realized that it is all about people. And you know, your approach to business, to life, it's about your investment in people. And certainly, you know, my management style has always been about understanding the people that I work with, have empathy. This emotional intelligence side of management character, I think it's absolutely essential going forward. I think it's important to understand the commercial side of business. That's part of your day-to-day job. But the investment you make in your own growth as a leader in emotional intelligence and how you transfer that into your team and the culture that you create inside a company, absolutely essential.
This is Eye on Careers, and we are looking at the insights of David Donaldson, the finance director of Emirates Investment Authority, one of the leading sovereign funds in the nation, and it could be like a doctor.
I'm married to a doctor.
You're married to a doctor. There you go. Vimal Sethi, the managing director of Synchron, a sprawling IT company that started from a kitchen table and now has over 5,000 staff.